I was talking to Daniel and Ethan just before the service started because they were showing me this, okay? This is their collection, all to do with the World Cup, okay? And they were doing swapsies, okay? Now, the Victorians were known for collecting things, weren't they? Okay, certainly my forebears collected a lot of things. And not just stamps and cigarette cards. Okay, they were really popular, weren't they? I can remember as a child, that was passed on to me. I can remember collecting stamps. Cigarette cards were around, but there used to be ones with Brook Bond tea, is that right? And they were free, weren't they? Okay, these you have to pay for, I believe. Is that right? Yeah, quite a lot of money to get all of them. But I grew up with lots of collections in our household, and they didn't just collect things like stamps and cards of different things with different information on. They collected natural things as well, and I've still got at home lots of quite interesting fossils that I think it was my great-grandfather collected, probably from the coastline round about Whitby there. But there were two collections in the house as I grew up that were quite interesting, one of which is certainly now illegal, if it wasn't then, and the other one, as an informed adult, I wouldn't particularly encourage young people, children, to collect. Okay, my parents had a cabinet like this one. I don't know who it came from originally, some great uncle, I think. And it was just like this. They even had it when they moved to Bromsgrove, which wasn't that long ago. And when you opened up the drawers, just about 10 or 12 narrow drawers, the drawers were covered in glass, which you could slide out. And if you opened up the top two or three drawers, they were lined with cotton wool. And in the cotton wool, there were eggs. Not hen eggs for breakfast, but blown eggs. From tiny little blackbird ones, which I find regularly in our back garden that the cat has had, to great big ones, not all of them British. I think we've got a picture of what I mean here. Okay, so there was about three drawers of those. It's been illegal to take birds' eggs from the wild since 1954, so I'm absolutely certain that all the eggs that were in our house from that time, so that's a significant year, had been collected way before then, when it was still legal to collect eggs. But interestingly, since September 1982, it's been against the law to possess the egg of any British wild bird. So I'm absolutely certain that in 1982 that my father got rid of all the eggs somehow. I actually don't remember that point. I wasn't at home anymore. In all the other drawers, there were these. Butterflies. Again, not just British ones. My great-grandfather and great-uncle travelled very widely, particularly for somebody from that kind of era, all over the world, and one of them collected butterflies. And I had my own butterfly collection that had been passed on to me. And I have to say, I added to it. I would go up onto the common near Wilmslow, out South Manchester, with a big net and a jar with some kind of cotton over the top with holes in, okay, and a few leaves. And I would collect and catch butterflies, okay, take them home, put them in a jar that didn't have holes in the top so that they died. And then at the right moment, because if you left them for too long, they became brittle. So that when you tried to put a pin through them and to spread out their wings, because of the fragile nature, they just went to dust, really. Just, and you'll have all seen butterflies that have overwintered and died, and they will just crumble very easily in your hands. But I used to, my father showed me how to pin out and lay out butterflies correctly. Fragile, easily broken. The other thing I did as a child, which maybe children still do, is that I would find some caterpillars. Do you still do that? Yes, I can remember on holiday in Scotland once. In Scotland, you get those big furry caterpillars. You know, they just walk across the road in front of you, lots and lots of them. And I can remember from one holiday in Scotland, bringing some home in a cardboard box, again with some leaves in. And then at home, putting them in a big biscuit tin with some leaves, holes in the top. And then just leave it in a cool place to turn from a caterpillar into a chrysalis. And then hopefully into a butterfly. And here we have a painted lady. Amazing, isn't it, when you think about it? Something ugly, seemingly dead, because those chrysalis, those cocoons seem to be sort of dead. But inside, when it opens up, beautiful, beautiful butterfly. And I love butterflies, which is why I wouldn't encourage children to go and catch them now and kill them and pin them. To look at, they're much better seen when we can. So not as many of them as there used to be when I was a child, out enjoying their freedom. We're starting a new series today. It's going to go through the rest of July and over August. And these are the words that Paul has put. It's kind of entitled "The Barriers in Your Mind." And this is a quote from some Bible readings that he found. It says the Bible is filled with stories of little people, limited people, lackluster people, and in some cases, low-life people. People who penetrated the barriers beyond which they thought they couldn't go, and God used them to do amazing things. And he can do that for you too. A reminder, as we've already had in this service, that the Lord sees our full potential. We might not, but he sees our full potential, what we can become, because he looks beyond the things that we see perhaps as limitations or reasons why we feel unable or unworthy to serve him. God taking someone and transforming their life. And we're going to be looking at, I think it's Job next week, then you've got me again with Deborah. Moses, Peter, Caleb, another woman, that's me again, and Timothy. And we're starting with this small boy, aren't we, with his lunchbox. I hadn't seen that BBC clip before, but I thought that was just fantastic, the way that he put it, and particularly the fact that he didn't give his name. So he's remained unnamed. We never hear of him again, do we? So we can only imagine what he became. You know, I like to think that that never left him, how God, Jesus, used him on that day as part of a miracle, and that he grew up to be a man of faith who carried on following Jesus. But he's unnamed, and perhaps we can identify in some ways more with him than we can with some of these other, what we might see of as giants of faith. Moses, Paul, David. And yet they too started out as people who felt unworthy, who felt they were insignificant. David, perhaps in particular. God taking a life, transforming it. And it doesn't matter that we don't know any more about that boy, does it? That story is there to encourage us, to inspire us, to think that God can use us no matter how we feel. No matter what our past has been, how much we know about God, how much we know about his ways and how he wants to use us. The boy probably knew very little. He'd heard about Jesus performing other miracles. But he must have thought, here is a man that I can trust. You know, when he took that meager meal, the loaves and the fishes to Jesus, he must have thought, this man's not going to look down on me. He's not going to rubbish my small offering. I can trust him. He can do something with it. He knows what he's doing. And that's the same for us, isn't it? No matter how inadequate we think our gift, our action, our words are, it's not about us, but about God, how great and amazing he is. I think the next slide has something. There we go. That's the slide that Emma used. Little faith, big God, huge results. Going back to butterflies, some of you will have heard of the butterfly effect, chaos theory. Very small, very seemingly insignificant event leading to a bigger, catastrophic event. Now, I don't claim to understand the science and maths behind this theory. In fact, when I looked at it online, I thought, I don't understand half the words they're using, okay? But it's to do with basically, and it's often applied to weather systems. Some scientist whose name I can't remember, he sort of, in an experimental way, proved that the fluttering of a butterfly's wings in Beijing caused, several weeks later, a hurricane in South America, the other side of the world. A chain of events, starting with very small, leading to something bigger, increasing in size and impact. And that's what's known as the butterfly effect. And it's been used, so it's been proved sort of theory, scientifically, to actually happen. And it's been used in lots and lots of different films as well, classic one being It's a Wonderful Life, where you can see some people nodding from the back. It's a black and white film. Still a very good film with starring Jimmy Stewart. And he's shown that he feels bad about his life. And he's taken back and shown that if he hadn't existed from the start, if he hadn't been born, all the people that would have never experienced wonderful things. And there's another film with Gwyneth Paltrow called Sliding Doors. One small event, one small change, her not getting on an underground tube train, led to a completely different life. And there's lots of other ways in which it's been used in literature and in film. But it's about a seemingly very small event in the butterfly effect causing or creating a major disorder. And I wanted to link that to the word miracle. I have a thing about the word miracle because I'm not being critical here and I quite understand, but people use it in all sorts of ways, don't they? They might say, it was a miracle I got a job. Strictly and biblically speaking, people get jobs every day, don't they? It might be absolutely fantastic and amazing that you have got that particular job. But biblically, a miracle is about changing the natural order of things. All the miracles that Jesus did were not natural. He altered because he was God who created things in the first place, a natural order. A spoken word, calming a storm. Walking on water, water into wine. The blind being able to see. Feeding 5,000 people with 2 fish and 5 loaves, or 3 loaves, depending on which version you're looking at. Things that we cannot explain in any other way than by an act of Almighty Creator God. God's butterfly effect. Small things in a person's life, little things, bringing about bigger things. And perhaps some of the time we don't even know what it is that he's actually doing. We don't see that end effect. We can think of becoming a Christian in that way, can't we? Being born again, spiritually. We just have to say a few words. We just have to say sorry. Acknowledge Jesus as Saviour and as Lord. Acknowledge his death on the cross for us personally. Suddenly, there's a transformed life. A complete reversal, a complete change. The I in our lives crucified and given over to him. Spiritually made new. Caterpillar into a butterfly. Freedom, freedom from sin, freedom to do the things that God created us to do in the first place. You know, you might think that it would have helped or would help a butterfly when it's in that cocoon if you cut it open and let it free quickly, pace so it doesn't have to sort of stay in there. And if you've ever seen slow motion film of the cocoon, the butterfly isn't just static within that covering. It's moving. It's struggling. You think, let's just let it free. But if you did that, it would be crippled. Because as it's struggling inside the cocoon, the blood flow is increasing to the wings and the muscles are strengthening. So it's at the right time, when the butterfly is strong enough, the cocoon will just fall away and the butterfly flies. Freedom, as it's meant to be. The writer to the Hebrews talks about struggles in our life, particularly in chapter 12 after the great chapter on faith, that those struggles strengthen us. Paul talks about resisting to the point of shedding blood, the difficulties in his life, but he says that perseverance produces strength, produces faith, and that faith produces hope. God allows those small things in our lives that we might find difficult to strengthen us, to enable us to be the people that he wants us to be. Not all our small acts of kindness that we do will result in miracles, will they? But the point is that one small act of obedience, doing what God wants us to do, can have a big impact because of God. One life can be used by God to change many, many other lives. Think of Billy Graham, going back a long time. There have been other people since. One life, thousands of people, lives changed through what he said and did. All we have to do is to trust and obey. Be prepared to allow God to use any part of us. Every part of us. I want us to think and respond to that whilst watching a video clip. It's a hymn that we're familiar with, Take My Life and Let It Be. But the words aren't appearing, there are just images appearing of the words that are mentioned in the song. And as this is playing, I want you just to respond to God. It's a prayer, if you like, that God would take every part of us that we offer to him and use it in some way to transform